Good evening, everyone, and welcome to a Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. I am your host, Lance White. Before I introduce tonight's guest, I'd like to share a little story with you. I just completed writing a book, and I gave a copy to one of the clerks at the video store a couple of days ago. When I went in today to return my film, she flew over, threw her arms around me, and told me that she absolutely loved every word and couldn't put it down. So I'm tuning my own horn and letting you know that it's called Tales of a Zany Mystic, and it's now available at Amazon.com. And there you can read reviews and look inside the book. Tonight's guest is an amazing being of light. Her name is Lori Daniel Falk. Lori is a spiritual life coach, celestial networker, and mystical artist. She channels a divine team of angels and guides and creates angelic drawings that create a profound healing to all who view them. I think her story is best told in her own words, so without further ado, I'd like to welcome her to the show. Hi, Lori. How are you tonight?
I'm infinitely splendid. Thank you for asking, and thank you for inviting me to be on your show, Lance.
Oh, I'm delighted to have you. You know, what I said about you hardly covers, you know, your story, so I'd kind of like you to share with, you know, in your own words, what you used to do and what happened to wake you up and created a spiritual awakening for you.
Well, I shared a bit with you earlier today. I was actually in the fashion industry, and I had been a buyer at a number of different retail stores, Gimbel's, back in the day. Now that tells everyone how old I am. And then I had a trade publication for executives in the retail fashion industry. So basically I spent 20 solid years in retailing and fashion and publishing and corporate America. And then I had a midlife crisis. And I woke up at the ripe old age of 40 and I said, you know, hemlines go up and hemlines go down and nobody dies from it. And it just doesn't matter. But if I have to write another story about fashion, I might die. Now, the problem was I had had my own trade publication for 15 years. So here I was. In the throes of the fashion industry, on the board of directors of the Fashion Group International, and, you know, really had made a name for myself and had absolutely no idea what I would do if I walked away from this. So I just kept saying, show me what I'm here for, show me what I'm supposed to do, and then please, somebody, tell me how to get there, because I really didn't want to go back to school and re-educate myself and do all of this, and spirit does what spirit does. Intervenes when we can't figure it out ourselves. So I went through a dark night of the soul and, you know, went through some severe burnout, clinical depression, spent a year on the couch and watched everything I had spent my adult life building kind of disintegrate around me. And in the deepest, darkest days of it all, I said, you know what, I just know there's a reason for this. And I know when I come out on the other end, I'm going to help people. And so I did come out on the other end and was led to some amazing teachers, some very, it's like when the student is ready, the teacher appears. And I was led to the School of Spiritual Psychology and met a shaman and a mystical Christian, and I just was getting inundated with spiritual theological views and the whole New Age metaphysical thing, just like it exploded in front of my eyes.
Wow.
And I was like a sponge. I just couldn't get enough of it.
Yeah, I know that feeling.
Yeah.
It's wonderful, isn't it?
I just felt so alive again. I felt like I had a reason for being.
Yeah.
And I remember my dad said to me one day after I had enrolled in the School of Spiritual Psychology, he said, well, what are you going to do, like, when you get done? And I said, I don't have a clue. Which, you know, for a German father, that was like, oh, my God, what is she doing? But he could see that I was happy, and I think that mattered more to him than anything. And so I just kept following the energy and following guidance. And shortly, well, probably about a year into the program, I started channeling messages from my mom, who had passed away in 1980. And she became like the spokesperson of this divine team of angels and guides that I'm now working with. And I just kept getting the messages. Every day I'd take some time and I'd check in with them. And the messages were a little cryptic at first, but, you know, I learned the language, basically. Uh-huh. And they told me one day to be a spiritual life coach. And I threw my pen across the room. I'm like, what? I didn't know what it was. I had never heard of anyone being a spiritual life coach. And yet it made more sense than anything ever had in my entire life because I'd always wanted to be a psychologist.
Wow.
So I did a little research on it and come to find out, wow, you could even get certified in this. So I became a spiritual life coach and literally handed out, I think, 20 brochures the very first time that I went to a trade show. And landed my first paying client.
Wow.
And that's pretty good.
Not bad, yes.
Not bad.
I
didn't even have business cards yet. You know, it was just like this little flyer that I had made up. So, But you know what's interesting, Lance? On the way there, I was driving through six lanes of cement. And I pulled up to this intersection. And this crow swooped over the roof of my car, down to the cement in front of the car, and then swooped back up with this huge chunk of bread in its mouth. And I thought, if that's not a sign, I don't know what is.
Wow.
If that crow could find sustenance in the middle of all this, you know, man-made concrete, then I certainly am going to be successful as a spiritual life coach, and sure enough. And then one thing led to another, and I just kept getting guided and directed. But the key is you have to ask. Because we have free will on this earth plane, and if you don't ask, they really can't intercede on your behalf. So I just kept asking and following, and every once in a while they'd throw me a curveball, like they did with this arc, where they just kept telling me to draw. And I said, draw? Draw what? I have no art training. This is insane. Well, you know, they kind of... I'm sure we're looking at me like, yeah, well, you didn't know how to talk to angels last year either, so tell us what difference that makes.
Now, you were pretty successful with your clientele at that point. Is that accurate?
Mm-hmm.
As a spiritual life coach?
Yes.
When they started to tell you to draw something?
Right.
Okay.
In fact, my mentors at the School of Spiritual Psychology were even referring clients to me.
Wow.
And I was getting a lot of word-of-mouth referrals. And I had started teaching celestial communication workshops. And the celestial communication workshops were amazingly successful. It was a class project. They told us we had to teach a one-hour class. And I said, oh, okay, I'll teach a class on how to connect with your angels. And being a type A Capricorn, I had like, you know, 20 hours worth of material. And then I said, well, if I have all this material, I might as well do something with it. So I just sent out a notice to about 300 people that I was going to teach a class on communicating and connecting with your angels and guides, and 25 people showed up.
Wow.
So it was every time I listened to guidance, I was supported. And people showed up, and it was just magical.
That's kind of a big secret, isn't it, to learning how to align with your soul's purpose, is learning how to follow that guidance and not just listen to your mind and shut it down and say, oh, no, I can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, and so just then, when you think you know, you don't know. Because
right.
I actually went to see a shaman about 2 years into my coaching, and he asked me what I did for a living, and I told him that I had the best job in the world.
Huh.
He said, really? Well, what's that? And I said, well, I'm a spiritual life coach. And he said, well, why would that be the best job in the world? And I said, because I get to help people find their joy. And there's nothing better than that.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Isn't that? That's wonderful. You know, your drawings are absolutely amazing. Let's hear more about that and how it evolved and the energy that goes into them and so on.
Well, that's kind of a nice segue into it, because this shaman disagreed with me.
Oh, really?
And said I didn't have the best job in the world, because I hadn't found my own joy. And lo and behold, it was the art that was really going to bring me to a higher place of joy than anything had in the past.
Huh.
And but I was so upset with the poor man. I was just so upset with him. I was like, how dare you tell me I don't have the best job in the world? Anyway, I was continuing to channel messages from my mom and my team of angels and guides, and I kept getting these like little notes that said draw.
Huh.
And I'd be like, draw what? And finally, I had one of those days in January. Anyone who's from the Midwest or Wisconsin in particular understands January can be very unpleasant. So it was one of those days, and I was trying, and my logical type A Capricorn brain was working. So I said, fine, you want to draw? Let's go draw. But here's what. It better mean something. We're not going to just go play. So I'm going to ask you a question, and then you can give me an answer, and then we can draw.
Hmm.
And I said, so tell me, what does the world need to know now? And I drew an angel card. It flew out of the deck. And the card that flew out was all is well. All is in divine order.
Huh.
And then I sat down in front of my altar, and I had these pastel chalks that I used to play with my nieces, and we'd putz around and draw a little bit. And I brought out the canvas or the paper and the chalks and sat down, and they literally guided me step by step what color chalk to use, what to draw, where to put it. I had no idea what I was doing.
Huh.
No idea. And like 45 minutes later, I stood up and I went, oh my God, I like it. Now, Lance, I am so self-critical. That was like weird that I liked it.
Yeah.
And, 20 years in the fashion industry, I had a very critical eye for line and design and color.
Yep.
So the fact, again, that I liked it was even more amazing. And so I started showing it to people, and they liked it.
Huh.
And then one of my friends said, okay, so, like, what's it going to take for you to really get that this is what you're supposed to do? And I said, I don't know. And she said, you know what? I do. You just need somebody to hire you to do one. And I'm hiring you, and we're doing it tomorrow at, like, 1 o'clock.
Wow.
And that's literally how it started.
Wow.
And so then I let her ask the question.
Uh-huh.
And I did a reading, from the angels. And I invoked her guides and my guides and kind of, put her questions forth and brought through the information she was looking for and then created a portrait. And she was sobbing by the time I was done. She was so moved by it.
Huh.
I was so moved by it, she came back and had like half a dozen more over the next 2 years.
Wow.
On all different topics and issues and things that she was dealing with. And so, spirit does what spirit does. And they didn't want me to get into my head about all this. So they really didn't explain it all to me until finally I kind of had a hissy fit. I said, look, this is important work. I get it. But if you want me to get this out to a broader audience, we need a website, we need brochures, and I need words to explain to people what this is. And
right.
That's when they started to explain to me that I was working with the Golden Light Angels, and they are all about emotions. They are like the governors of emotions and sensuality.
Oh.
And I think that's why my art actually has a very sensual feel to it.
Yeah, it does. It does.
And I no doubt it has to do with that energy coming through them. And then they told me that it was all about working with people at a heart level, and that while people wanted to get a quote-unquote angel reading because they wanted to hear it and get it on a cognitive level, hearing it wasn't going to actually heal them. But what the angels are doing through me is they're infusing this artwork with the energy of that message.
Uh-huh, yes.
And so then this artwork becomes actually an energy healing tool.
And
it works with the person at a heart level.
Right, right.
Surpassing the mind.
Right, that makes a lot of sense.
Like a crossing the blood-brain barrier.
You're right.
Getting right into the system. And so the shifts and changes happen without the person really having to think about it.
Mm.
Which is really wonderful.
It is wonderful. It really is. And I think it's probably part of the new paradigm that's going on for many people. Do you feel that everybody has access to the, everybody has the potential to access angels and guides as you have?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
I always tell people, I said, what everything I do, you can do too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just, especially with, I mean, the art is a push for some people, but the actual connection, the actual, you know, channeling, if you will, I look at it more as just having a conversation with them. But no one has a problem learning how to ask. It's easy to ask a question. What seems to be most challenging for people is, how do I interpret the messages that are coming back?
Mm.
And so what I tell them is, it's just like learning a foreign language. And I then teach them how to interpret those messages.
Well, that makes sense.
Because we get messages four different ways. We get them clairaudiently, which is hearing, clairsentiently, which is feeling, clairvoyantly, which is seeing, and claircognizantly, which is just knowing.
Uh-huh.
And everybody, those are like the four divine communication channels, and everybody has one primary channel. So
uh-huh.
I put them through, actually one of Doreen Virtue's books has a quiz in it, and I put them through the quiz to find out which of their channels is more open.
Oh.
And they can play with that, you know, to begin with, because that's going to be the easiest for them to actually interpret the messages. But then I help them to open each of the channels, because it's like the difference between watching a black and white television and a multimedia presentation.
I love that.
We are, you know, living in a multimedia era, so everybody wants that.
Right.
And so that's, it has been a magical experience, just watching people open up to that.
Uh-huh.
And I've taken probably hundreds of people through 8-week programs where they actually, the difference between day one and graduation day is like amazing.
Uh-huh.
Because they learn how to read the signs. Because they're not necessarily talking to us like you and I are having this fireside chat.
Right, right.
You know, you might all of a sudden look up at a billboard, and there's the answer to the question that you've been asking.
Uh-huh, exactly. And then synchronicity is another way that, they seem to work.
Mm-hmm.
Do you notice that synchronicity plays a role in recognizing their little clues and about each day's events?
Absolutely, absolutely. And I kind of call it following the energy.
Yeah, yeah.
And if if you set forth questions and ask for help and ask for guidance, you got to look at what starts to show up. And especially if stuff shows up that you're like amazed at, like you just like, how could that possibly have happened?
Yeah, that's usually a clue.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Now, you ask your angels various questions about life on Earth. What are some of the messages that have come through you?
It depends. Now, I've asked, the one that comes to mind immediately when you ask that question, excuse me, that's my darling, adorable Amanda, who's going to go in the other room right now. Yes. Mm-hmm. Angels, dogs can be angels, or they can be little pests sometimes, can't they, darling? Come on. So now all the dog lovers out there will know that I just put my darling daughter in the bedroom.
Oh, mine's being an angel tonight.
Oh, well, I thought she would, but the other one is. Tally's being good, Mandy's being naughty.
That's usually the other way around.
So.
We love doggy barks. It sounds like a cute little thing.
Oh, what makes this seem more real? I guess I need to ask the angels how to keep your dogs quiet when you're doing a radio interview.
Nah,
that'll be the next angel I do.
They just want to have their little say, too.
I know. Well, let me tell you. One of the questions I asked was, what do the indigo and crystal children need to know?
Ah, that's a good one.
It is. And really the message that came through was directed, of course, at the parents, because they're the ones that need to understand what's happening here.
Mm-hmm.
And these kids just have more circuits open.
Mm-hmm.
And they're more sensitive. So they need to live in a toxic-free environment, a chemical-free environment, an environment that has, you know, not all this chaos in it.
Well, that's not on planet Earth.
Well, I know, but we can at least try to, you know, create a home environment.
Right.
That's conducive to that. And that was really what the focus of that message was. And what's magical to me is that when I'm out doing shows, when the indigo, you know, the little indigo kids will come by the booth,
uh-huh.
and they'll point to that angel. That's the one I want, Mommy.
Oh.
In fact, I was at a show down in Orlando in October, and a little girl said, Mommy, that's what the angels in my dreams look like.
Wow. Now, the indigos and the crystals are kind of linked up to another subject that might be fun to talk about, and that is 2012.
Yes.
Do you have any insights about that subject?
Well, I actually, as a matter of fact, I just happened to have asked them about 2012. I did a whole series last January,
oh.
and that was one of them, because that's a question that everybody asks.
Mm-hmm.
And with that in mind, I'm going to do my own little plug here about getting out and voting this year, folks, because someone, a very dear, dear friend of mine, Donna Azura, who's a internationally known channel out in the Denver area, called me the other day and she said, you know what? This is such an important election. This is the only one before 2012.
Oh, that's right. I hadn't thought about that.
I had. She totally put it into perspective for me. So I thought that was something we all need to pay a little bit of attention to. So just make your vote heard. So I asked, what does the world need to know now about 2012?
Mm.
Seems a simple enough question, doesn't it?
It seems that way.
Well, interestingly enough, there's actually a simple answer, too.
Okay.
And what the angels told me that is this. We are, in the purest sense, simply bridging heaven and earth. We're creating right here, right now, what it is so many of us have always imagined the heavens to be like.
Wow.
And then they go on to say, you see, love is really all there is. It's all
uh-huh.
that matters. It's uh-huh. all that ever mattered.
Uh-huh.
Since all is now and always has been in divine order, it is pivotal to understand that the old must be released so that the new can enter in.
Mm.
We must focus on what it is we are wanting and let go of worry. Let go of our desire to control the outcome. 2012 and the ascension process are commonly referred to as one and the same. With that in mind, it's easy to understand that the true relevance of what's commonly referred to as the ascension attitudes of love, gratitude, and surrender are really what matters.
Wow.
And so we need to let go of our fears, let go of our old way of doing things.
Mm-hmm.
And if there really are only two emotions, love and fear, which one would you want to focus on?
Well, then that kind of covers the question about why is there so much corruption and evil in the world today. It has to do with hanging on to the past, to the old paradigms, and the of control and fear.
Mm-hmm.
And so releasing those, by the time enough people release that, those elements will transform themselves.
Right.
Or they'll disappear, hopefully.
Well, you know, it's interesting, Lance. They say that once 13% of the population accepts something as being true, it enters the mass consciousness and everyone can tap into it.
Wow.
So we as light workers have a mission. We have to reach 13% of the population.
Yeah.
Before 2012. And I believe we will see world peace. In fact, last night I did my friend Donna's world peace meditation.
Uh-huh.
And we had a good-sized group here, and one of the gentlemen in the group actually said that during the meditation, he saw the soldiers putting down their guns and walking away from the tanks.
Wow.
And the conversation that ensued after that really was about the fact that once we are vibrating at that frequency of love,
mm-hmm.
The war and destruction and all of that can't even exist.
Right, exactly.
So it's really everything that we can do to let go of our limiting beliefs, everything that we can do to focus on love, and joy and being in a higher vibration is what's going to make a difference.
Now, that kind of leads me into another question, that part of that process has to do with healing our past as well. Is that not true?
Yes.
I'm going to bring up a sensitive subject for you, but there quite a few people have been at the effect of childhood abuse, males and females. And I think you know some statistics and have some inside information on that. How important is that to let those matters heal, to bring them up and to release them? And can you share some insight about that subject?
Absolutely, absolutely. And there's two parts to that. And let me just address the first part is that everybody's been listening to The Secret, which I think is a fabulous book, movie, DVD, whatever.
Right.
But what The Secret doesn't address enough is that it's our subconscious that's ruling so much of what's going on in our lives.
Uh-huh.
And most people don't have a clue what's going on in that subconscious, and they don't understand that everything that's happened to them gets stored in their bodies at a cellular level.
Right, right.
And those old tapes are playing over and over and over again, and that is what we are creating. That's the place where most of us are creating from.
Right, right.
So until we go in there and pull those beliefs or go in there and clean that up, all the positive affirmations in the world aren't going to shift your life entirely. I'm not going to say they won't make a difference, because anything you do is going to help.
But the positive affirmations are just like layers on top of something that's not healing, like water that's going on top of the roof.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. And so that's why, and there are many different modalities out there, but in particular, that's why these angelic message portraits are so powerful, because they go past the mind and into the heart and help the healing to occur. And the abuse is the other subject that you just brought up. And I was sexually abused as a young girl, and I really didn't even have a recollection of it until just a few years ago. But it's when I look at my life, it impacted it in so many ways on so many levels.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of the I'm maybe not as happy about in my life.
Mm-hmm.
One being the fact that I didn't have children. I could tie it all back to the fact that I was abused, because the impact that abuse had is what created a lot of the other things that played out in my life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I was having this conversation with my therapist about it one day, and I said, enough. I want this cleared, and I want to go forward, and I want to create something better this time. What do I do? And she said, you go home and create a portrait for yourself.
Uh-huh.
And I said, I'm paying you to tell me to go home and do my own stuff. And she said, pretty much. So I went home and I created a portrait, and I asked, what do I need to know to heal from the sexual abuse? And it was one of the most powerful portraits I've ever done, because it was my deepest, darkest issue.
Right.
And when I was done with it, I was sobbing. I mean, it was so powerful, and I couldn't get near it.
Huh.
So I hung it in the foyer, because it made me uncomfortable. And I had two clients come in the next week that also had been abused. And they got to the top of the stairs and stood in front of this portrait and just started crying.
Wow.
And I thought, oh, my God. And then they were, like, so apologetic. Oh, no, Lori, I'm sorry. It's beautiful. I don't know why I'm crying. And I said, I do. And, you know, and I explained to them. And that showed me that it really didn't even matter who the portrait was done for. If they had a similar issue, it was going to work.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it took about 2 weeks before I could move it into the living room. And another 2 weeks before I could move it into my bedroom.
Huh.
And then about 6 weeks later, I did another portrait, and the colors were entirely different, and it totally shifted the energy. But I think I might have mentioned to you, I'm not sure, I take a lot of these portraits around the country with me when I go to the various shows and things, and this is the only one that ever got wet. And the place that it got wet is where this angel is, like, kneeling, and she's crying this infinity river of tears.
Uh-huh.
And right where the tears are, his work out wet.
Wow. I can see that. I'm looking at it right now. It's one of your darker. It's still beautiful, but you can tell that there's a lot of emotion in it.
Mm-hmm.
And you can even see that where the watermarks, you know, where the water hit it and she's crying. It's quite moving.
It's not one I want to focus
on for too terribly long.
No, and every time a woman picks this up at one of my shows, invariably she's been abused.
Yeah, yeah.
So then flash forward a few years, and I remember talking to my mentor, and I said, you know, it's such a shame when I think of how this impacted my life. And she said, well, Laura, you need to think about, you know, what do you want to carry forward in your life from this experience?
Uh-huh.
You can just reframe it a little bit. I think that'll help. And so I put that on a post-it note and set it down on the kitchen counter because I really just at the moment wasn't in the mood to think about it.
Right.
And so later that night I had fallen asleep on the couch while I was watching a movie, and I woke up and there was this commercial that came on. And I woke up out of a deep sleep, and the first thing I heard was, one out of every four women will be sexually abused by the time they're 18.
Wow. Wow.
This horrified me.
Wow.
That it's that, you know, prevalent in our society. And I spoke to a couple of psychologists about it, and they said, oh, dear heart, if it were only 25%, that would be wonderful.
Wow.
That's just the reported cases.
Oh, my God.
And the next thing that flashed on the screen after I heard that statistic was darknesstolight.org. And I immediately went to the website and found out that this was an amazing charitable organization that's out there actually trying to bring this issue into the forefront and to help heal it. Just
wow. It's called Darkness Into Light?
DarknessToLight.org.
DarknessToLight.org.
And so I had put that on the post-it note. And the next day when I woke up, these two post-it notes were sitting there right next to each other on the counter. And I said, oh, wow. Okay, I get it. This, again, everything in our life happens for a reason. And you talk about synchronicity.
Uh-huh.
I mean, there it was. And it was like, okay, all right. So I went through this, but that's okay because I can help make a difference now because I've gone through it.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I then created what we call our childhood protection angel.
Oh.
And she was created specifically to help stop the abuse of children.
Wonderful.
Because it is. It's an enormous social issue, and it's swept under the rug
often. That's one of the reasons why I wanted to bring it up, because people have so much shame around something that happened that's over with in the past. And like you said, many people aren't even aware that it's happened until they start getting into therapy. They just block it out entirely. And I think it's crucial in the spiritual process and in the healing process to bring these issues up and look at them and allow them to come up with compassion and learn how to love yourself and let them go.
Mm-hmm.
And I've known men who've been abused too, and I think that the statistics on those are probably pretty close to the same ones. I don't think there's too much difference. I don't know if you have picked up anything about that, but
right, 1 out of 6.
Okay.
Boys will be sexually abused by the time they're 18.
Not as many, but still, there shouldn't be any.
And honestly, Lance, again, when I've talked to my friends who are psychologists, they say the statistics for boys are just as high, but
yeah,
they're less reported than they are.
Oh, yeah,
girls.
Yeah.
I mean, I've known men who were abused by priests when they were young.
I was just going to say, that seems to be a pretty common occurrence in the priesthood.
Yes.
I wonder why that, I guess because the priests feel that they can justify it living, I don't know why.
I don't either. I really don't want to know. Don't even get me started on that one. That's that's a very highly charged issue. But the beauty is that this artwork can go out and help make a difference without people even knowing it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because if someone can look at the angel, and if they don't read the description on the back, they won't have a clue what it means.
Yeah.
And there's actually an art gallery in a very well-to-do, well-known, and I don't really want to, the product's not in the store yet, so I don't want to really tell who it was at this point, but let's just say it's a large amusement park.
Okay.
And they're considering picking this up.
Wow.
Now, we'll probably change the information on the back a little bit so that it isn't, you know, hitting people over the head.
Right.
But does it matter? Not at all.
Right, because the energy comes through the drawing.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, and
yeah.
It will put every child whose bed this is hung above or whose room this is in or who picks up one of our little magnets and, you know, carries it with them or something,
uh-huh.
is going to be protected.
I love that. That is so nice.
Right.
That's so wonderful.
Right. So our goal is to get this out to as many people as possible, and then we're going to donate a percentage of the proceeds from this specific angel to organizations that are going to help stop
sexual abuse
of children.
Wow. That's wonderful. It seems like that's what you're describing is the way that life should be, you know, and the fact that you were in a corporate system that was going nowhere, and, you know, you look at the world today and you realize that most people are in jobs, not even in good corporate jobs, but in dead-end jobs that they can't stand, working with people that they don't like, and they're stuck there because now they can't afford to leave the jobs. But now you're saying that you can survive even at age 40, or older in my case. I mean, I was 58 before my book came out. Mm-hmm. And, you know, who would have thought that a life of... that my life would lead to that direction, but it's exactly what you said. You know, I just followed the spirit, and spirit just takes you so clearly, step by step, and it's, you know, I think we might have a caller. Do we have a caller?
Actually, that I think I hit that button.
Oh, okay. Maybe the angels are saying, get the hook. Well, anyway, one thing I wanted to find out about it. Oh yes, how do you advise people to move into alignment with what presents in their lives?
Well, the first thing you have to do is you have to get them out of their head.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as a spiritual life coach, you're absolutely right. Most of my clients that walk in this door are third dimensionally very successful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they've got the successful career, and they've got the IRAs and the 401ks, and, you know, but they also have the big mortgages and everything, and, you know, the kids' college funds that they're saving for and all of that. And and then there's the I word. Do you know what the I word is, Lance?
No, I don't.
Insurance.
Oh, yeah.
I couldn't possibly leave my corporate job because then I wouldn't have insurance.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So many people are just locked into these
beliefs, limiting beliefs.
Limiting beliefs, thank you, yeah. Absolutely, and it's all based on we're raised to think that this is how it is, and everybody's got to be in this little box.
Right, right.
So my job is to get them out of their head and into their heart.
Right, right.
And I put them through, you know, a series of different exercises and modalities to do that. And then once they get them in their hearts, they can start to see that maybe what they're here for is far greater and far bigger than what they imagine.
Oh, absolutely.
And then you start teaching them about the law of attraction and showing them that, you know, everything is energy and that we are based on where we're at emotionally, vibrating in a certain frequency and attracting at that frequency. And we show them, like, what's showing up in your life?
Mm-hmm.
And what are you thinking about most of the time? And then we have to retrain them how to think differently.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then how to manage their emotions. And then how to clear their limiting beliefs. And my clients that actually stick with it and go through the process, their lives shift and change in such magical ways. It's just nothing short of beautiful.
Huh. How important is spirituality in all this, or is that something that maybe doesn't play a role in the initial transformation of people?
Well, we're spiritual beings having a human experience.
Mm-hmm.
So really everything is spirit.
Right, right.
But most people don't understand that because they get so caught up in traditional religious, you know, thinking that they aren't. They hear spirituality and they kind of go, ooh.
Right.
But spirituality and science is really what metaphysics is all about.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And, I mean, the quantum biologists are saying, you know, this is how it is.
Yeah, yeah.
It is spirit, and it is working in magical ways, and we are all interconnected, and it is all one. And, I mean, they've done studies, and they've proved these things. So, it's, to me, it's no longer a matter of, Is it possible? It is possible. They've proved it's possible.
Mm-hmm.
They've proved these things. So I've just seen it over and over again. And when I get people to tune in, and, you know, I talk a lot about angels, and I do angelic message portraits, and people have said to me once, why? And I said, it's the way it was given to me.
Uh-huh.
And maybe because 85% of the people in this country believe in angels.
Huh.
So, I mean, we could call it your higher self, but how many of the people really understand what that is? If we could tell them that an angel is an aspect of their higher self.
Uh-huh.
But, I mean, then you're pushing the envelope.
But
if we tell them we're going to connect with their angels,
yeah.
If we tell them they can connect with their angels, now that's a concept most of them can grasp.
Yeah, yeah.
But if we tell them we're going to teach them how to tap into their higher self, now you've lost them right there.
Well, what's a higher self?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So I think, and it depends. There's all different means to the same end, and it depends on what path you're on. And the path that I've been put on at this point is to bring it through on an angelic level. And I think it's just because that's an understandable level.
Yeah, yeah. And it's an energetic vibration,
mm-hmm.
which, like you said, it's directed towards the heart, and it's the heart is the gateway to, you know, to the higher realms and to the soul.
Absolutely.
So.
Absolutely, and isn't it interesting? The heart chakra is, you know, the one connecting the lower and the higher chakras. The lower ones,
right.
Grounding us into the earth, and the higher ones taking us up into the celestial realms, if you will.
Right, and they did tell us that, you know, heaven and earth, we're the bridge between heaven and earth.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what that looks like or how that unfolds, I don't know if anybody has any answers to that one, unless you do.
Well, I think it's unfolding before our very eyes.
Okay.
I really do. I think, yeah. You know, I remember when I first heard 2012, and my friend who's a shaman wanted me to promote an event for her on 2012, and I said, I don't get it. You've got to explain this to me.
Uh-huh.
And her name is Jojo Pa, and I said, Jojo Pa, tell me, what is this 2012 thing? And she said, well, in a nutshell, here's what it is. Today, he who has the money has the power.
Uh-huh.
In 2012, that won't be the case. And boy, again, remember, type A Capricorn, try to wrap your brain around that.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
So I said, you mean to tell me that our entire structure as we know it is going to change by 2012? And she said, yeah, that's
yeah.
What I'm telling you. I said, okay, so he who has the money is not going to have the power. Then I started doing the logical thing, and it started to make sense to me, because I'm like, okay, well, more and more people are out there teaching the law of attraction, and more people are teaching people how to manifest.
Uh-huh.
And when I really get serious about manifesting, I can manifest more money in 4 months than it would take me several years to make.
Mm-hmm.
So when I really get serious about it, so I've seen this happen. I know the power. I know how incredible it can be. Someone has to ask why I don't do that all the time, but that's a whole other story. So then I thought, okay, well, if I'm teaching people how to manifest, and other people are teaching people how to manifest, and enough people learn how to manifest, then, you know, how to manifest, I guess you wouldn't even need a job. And then you really don't need money, because things show up how things show up when you're manifesting.
That's right.
And I went, oh, but that's only 9 years. That's when we're having this conversation. And 9 years, how can that happen in 9 years? Well, then that's when I started to understand the whole 100th monkey theory, and the fact that once 13% of the population accepts something as true,
uh-huh.
everyone can tap into it. And I went, oh, well, we can do that. We can reach 13% by 2012. And, you know, it's really fascinating. Life coaching is the fastest growing service industry there is today.
Oh, it is amazing. I have had quite a few life coaches on, and some call themselves psychic intuitives, and they have, everybody has a different area of expertise. But one thing that is in common is that everybody's working in the heart level, in the heart chakra.
Mm-hmm.
And I like what you say about the 13% and the 100th monkey, because it takes away the idea that everybody on the planet has to think a certain way at the same time.
Right.
In other words, it doesn't have to be like that. At a certain percentage, the scale tilts, and then everybody has the same information.
Mm-hmm.
And that's headed in the direction of a higher consciousness.
Right, right. So I do believe that this is all possible, and it's possible even, you know, by 2012, even though it's 2008. I think, you know, if you just look at what happened in the last year after The Secret came out, I mean, how many people were exposed?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, you put something like that on Oprah Winfrey and masses are
informed.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So I think we're getting there. And the other thing I see that's happening is the more you clear yourself of the limiting beliefs and those things going on in the subconscious and the fears and all those things that are holding you back, the higher your frequency becomes.
Okay.
And I don't know if you've seen the movie, The Celestine Prophecy.
Yes, I have.
I mean, I read the book years ago when it first came out, but actually seeing it in the movie, it just really brought it home for me. Remember the scene where they were vibrating at such a high frequency that the enemy couldn't see them?
Yes, yes.
Well,
yes,
I've actually been in a restaurant
where
we were seated in the middle of the room, and I was with someone else who was very conscious and had done a lot of work on himself as well. There were tables around us that ate their entire dinner before we were asked if we wanted anything.
Oh, wow.
And we just laughed because we really got that they couldn't see us.
Interesting. Oh, I totally believe that. I've heard lots of stories about that particular effect, that, you know, other people not being able to see you or vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting.
It is, it is. So I think that, you know, we've got a lot of people out there doing their work and a lot of people making these shifts and changes. And as each new person becomes enlightened, then they go out and enlighten more people.
Yep, yep.
And it's spreading like wildfire.
Well, it seems that it is, and I'm hoping it is. And sometimes I believe that, and sometimes I'm not as sure about that. But it's reassuring when I talk to people like yourself who, you know, just completely do a life change, and obviously you're totally connected to your higher self, and you're manifesting some beautiful, beautiful experiences for people, and it's opening people's lives and healing. That's surely a miracle, if nothing else.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, I think back and look at how hard it was to walk away from all of that and how I had absolutely no idea. But isn't it Deepak Chopra that says you're in your greatest strength when you don't know?
Oh, yes,
he calls it being in the gap. I hate being in the gap. Don't you hate being in the gap?
Yep, yep. And then do you often think, too, what would have happened if you had clung to your old life? I mean, where you would be today and not even knowing about the miracles and the beauty.
Right.
You know.
And if I hadn't said, okay, let's draw.
Right, right. And we do get those messages, and it's, you know, how... That's something that maybe you can share with the listeners, too, is how do you determine which messages are the ones that are guiding you towards being aligned with your soul's purpose? Because, you know, people often say they'll discount the messages in their heads, but that's where you get your best advice.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, you get your best advice when you get the idea in your head and you pay attention to the feeling in your stomach.
Yes, yes, absolutely. That's how it works for me.
Right, right. So how does it feel? I kind of tell people, close your eyes and imagine going into that scenario and play it out in your mind. And if you get excited about it, and it feels like something that you want to move towards, then you know that it's for you.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you play it out in your mind and it brings up, you know, red flags and fear and you get knots in your stomach, then it's probably not the right direction for you.
Right.
See, we have a tool that we so don't utilize enough, and that's our imagination.
Absolutely.
It's free. For one thing.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
You know, you can go there and you can try on all kinds of different things.
Yeah.
But most of us don't do that because that's, what is that, daydreaming? Oh, my God. You know,
yeah.
We were told not to daydream when we were 6.
Oh, I
Why
know.
Would we want to be doing that when we're, you know, 36 or 46 or
yeah.
whatever? Everybody's afraid to do that. So I always often say I give my clients permission to daydream. And if they could just do it a little bit every day.
Mm-hmm.
Try different things on. Try it on for size. It's kind of like playing dress up.
Yeah, yeah.
Moving into make-believe a little bit.
Yeah, I like that. That's beautiful.
And nobody even needs to know you're doing it, so it's not like anybody's going to think you're sitting around talking to spirits or something. You're just tuning in to that little voice inside of you and letting it play out like on a movie screen before you.
That. That's nice.
And then, if you like what you see, then what I tell them to do is to get into that emotional state and stay there.
Uh-huh.
And really feel it. And feel that feeling. And then send that feeling out to the universe. And say yes to that. And then you're letting the universe know what it is you are really wanting to bring in.
Makes sense.
It does, because the big hang-up a lot of people have is they stay in the wanting. Well, I want this. But if you keep wanting this, what do you think the universe is going to bring you?
Want more wants.
More wants, exactly. Exactly. So we have to get them past the wanting and into actually visualizing it. And
yes,
sense
that's
it as if it's real.
Yes, that's really important, and that's a consistent message that I've heard, and also that I've used for myself as a tool. You have to be able to visualize it in your mind's eye.
Yes. So, Lance, what I want you to do is every day spend a few minutes visualizing your name on the bestseller list.
Ah, okay.
On the New York Times bestseller list.
All right. I can make that agreement with you.
And visualize yourself being on the Oprah Book Club.
You know, I've already done that.
Excellent.
But it's funny because it seems very real to me. It just seems like I'm going to be on Oprah's Book Club, and I see myself with Oprah.
I see. I will hold that vision with you.
Wonderful. And the New York Times bestseller list.
Yeah. Why not?
Absolutely. And if the reviews are coming back to me from the, you know, my friends and relatives are accurate, it looks like it could head in that direction pretty easily.
Well, I'll let you know next week when I get mine.
That's right. I am sending you a copy.
Yes.
It's also a bridge. I've noticed this is just about following your dreams. I sent a copy to my cousin, and she and I have not really been close, and I felt like there was something between us. And she just wrote back and opened her heart and said, I couldn't put your book down, and I didn't know all of this was going on, you know, when we were kids. And she shared about her mother and her father, and it just opened so many doors on an emotional level. It was like a miraculous moment. And I thought, I guess it was the right thing to do.
Absolutely.
You know, and so when the feedback from the universe is like a mirror, when it comes back in such a positive way, you know you're on the right track.
Absolutely.
You just know.
I know, and it's in opening our hearts and our souls and sharing our experiences that other people will learn. Because, you know, most people go, oh, my God, they think they're the only one that has that problem.
Exactly. Exactly. And then as soon as you talk to somebody else, you realize they have the same concerns and problems.
Right, right. And I remember when I decided to come forward with the abuse.
Yes.
My business colleague said, oh, my God, are you sure you want to do that? Are you really ready for that? And I said, I don't have a choice.
Right, right.
If I want to make a difference, I don't have a choice.
That's right. Absolutely. Exactly. You have to.
Right.
You know, and same thing with me. You know, I write about my days as an alcoholic and involved with drugs and various other things, but it's a tool for other people. I've healed all those issues, and now it's time to pass the torch on to someone else and help other people. You know, because there's still so many people out there that are struggling with just common issues that are stopping them from being happy. And I just really admire you for, you know, going into the abuse thing with such heart and compassion, because it's so important to get these issues up and out so that they can heal.
It is. It is. And I think what's also important, and I haven't shared this with many people, but I think it's time to say it because I think it will make a difference. You can heal it within you to the point that you can love the perpetrator.
Mm-hmm.
Because I have not 1 ounce of animosity towards the individual that this occurred with.
Wow.
And that's amazing. I have nothing but love for that person.
Well, if you really want to take it to the next step, you can view this as part of your soul's life path, and that, you know, the people that are perpetrated in our lives and that we feel that we've been victimized by probably agreed to do that on a soul level for our own soul's growth. You know, when you think back about all the experiences that happened, they did help us grow. And, you know, a lot of people who have had near-death or near-death experiences do talk about that we create these situations in advance.
Mm-hmm.
So,
absolutely. In fact, I have to plug this book because it's my favorite book of all time, and it's by Neil Donald Walsh. And it's one of his lesser-known books. It's a children's book called The Little Soul and the Sun.
Oh.
And it in that book, that beautiful little book, it tells it so eloquently.
Wow.
It's a story of this little boy and how he's in heaven, and he's learning about that. And how when he comes into this lifetime that there's going to be someone that's going to do something that is going to be really not nice, but it's going to help him learn what it is he's coming into this incarnation to
learn. That's beautiful.
Yes. And
wow.
So what you said that so eloquently. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah,
and so I have a lot to be grateful to
mm-hmm.
this person for helping me and everyone else.
Mm. Well, I think we've run out of time. I want you to mention your website before we have to sign off.
All right. It's www.crystallineinstitute.com. And crystalline has two L's in it.
Wonderful. Lori, it's been a wonderful conversation with you, and I thank you from my heart.
I thank you from my heart. It's been a
All
pleasure
right.
to know
and,
you, Lance.
And enjoy the book when I send it to you. And good night, everybody. Good night, Lori.
Good night. Thank you again.
Bye.